All right, this is Tom Rowe. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, live from the Wave Farm. It's the Saturday afternoon show. And on via Skype, I believe from Chicago, we've got Nicholas Collins on the line. Nicholas, can you hear me?
I can indeed.
And we can hear you now, too. Well, let me turn that down a little, and we can hear you a little better. Are you in Chicago?
I am in Chicago. It's a rare occasion when I'm actually sitting in my apartment, but yes, I am.
All right. Well, welcome to WGXC, and we've got you here because you have a new app of one of your classic compositions, Pea Soup, called Pea Soup to Go, that has been released out into the World Wide Web this week or recently, or how? Tell us about it.
We launched it on the 24th of October, which was the 40th anniversary of the first performance of the original piece. And what it is it's the kind of app that really shouldn't have to exist, which is it's basically a jukebox of about 70 recordings of concerts with this piece that have been done in the last 40 years. But what it does is it shuffles through them like random play, but it randomizes the input and output points, so it's not the same every time, and it does very long crossfades, like 20-second crossfades. You would think something like this would be utterly trivial, and it turned out to be more complicated than it really should have. But the idea is that the piece is, it's a 70s piece that uses analog circuits to manipulate feedback in a room. And you basically get these sort of raga-like, very simple melodic patterns that are a function of the resonance of the room. It's sort of like I'm sitting in a room, stage two. And it's kind of sweet because it always tunes itself to the space. And so every hall you do it in sounds different. And if you have musicians playing with it, because it responds to sound and movement, you know, it always gives them a different sort of chart to play against.
And our listeners are hearing a bit of it behind you in the background live. We opened up the app online, which is at where is it at here?
Well, it's my website, which is just nicholascollinswithoutanh.com, and then if you do /peasoup2go, one word, it's there. But if you just Google my name and find my site, you can navigate your way through to it.
And can you tell us what were you thinking in it was 1974 when you put this piece together? Or,
mm-hmm.
Tell us about the origination of the original piece.
It's so funny to think about how primitive things were back then. You know, and I think of myself as a child of modernity compared to my predecessors. But, you know, everything was always primitive earlier than it is now. So, you know, at the risk of sounding obvious, there were no laptops, there was no MIDI, there were no effect boxes, you know, all of this. It's sort of like, what do you have to make electronic music with when you're not terribly wealthy in 1972? Well, a microphone and a speaker, duh. So I think, surely it's true now as well, but maybe more true back then, that every youngster trying to do experimental music went through a feedback phase. I mean, you know, we all did. And as you know, when you wiggle a mic around a speaker, it changes pitch, yeah? And a little bit of sort of poking around, I realized that, of course, what's happening is that the room's like a big bugle or something. And when you move the mic, it's like overblowing the different harmonics of the room, right? And I happened upon this incredibly cool circuit in our studios at Wesleyan, which was a kind of a phase shifter. And in the days before digital delays, this box made very, very short time delays, like time delays on the order of microseconds instead of seconds. Yeah. And if you stuck that between the mic and the speaker, it basically emulated moving the microphone. So it was like the lazy man's microphone mover, which meant that if you changed the phase delay, you could change what pitch of feedback came out. So with that basic technology happening, I basically set up these sort of multiple channels of this as a sort of self-stabilizing network. And it did. It just sort of created this sort of tranquil, minimalist series of pitches, like a kind of a really laid-back melody that was a function of the resonance of the room. And, you know, it was very much of the time. It was the 70s. You know, we were still recovering from 1968, and the studio was redolent of the smell of marijuana and patchouli. You know, this was sort of in the air at the time. So it was very kind of easygoing, open form piece.
But I guess you can kind of listen to musical history, and if you can hear the technology of the time, is kind of, like you were saying at the beginning, was kind of driven by, you can hear at that time that artists that didn't have a large budget, the best tool to work with was something like this. The feedback sound cropped up again and again because it was the instrument that was accessible sort of at the time.
Yeah, and you know what's so sweet is that we then get to a state in, say, the 90s when everybody's, you know, really, I mean, the computer thing is just zooming up on you, exponentially increasing power, you know. And yet what comes out in the sort of late 90s is circuit bending, obviously, is a sort of like a, gee, let's do something that's very, very sort of funky and hands-on. But the other is that the most recent generation of feedback artists are the ones doing the no-input mixing, you know, like Toshi Nakamura and a host of others, where again it's going down back to feedback as this sort of primordial electronic source. And what happened to me was that when I left the school, I lost access to these very cool boxes, and they were, you know, kind of unique, if that's not a stupid use of language. And you know, I moved on to do other stuff, and every now and then I'd return to feedback as some kind of material and use it in some other way. But then at the end of the 90s, because it works very nicely with instruments, a group that I was working with when I was living in Berlin asked if we could figure out how to revive the piece. So through a sort of comical series of correspondence with the original designer and attempts at circuit building, I cloned it in circuitry, and we did a couple of gigs, and then I wasn't wholly satisfied with my imitation of the original device, so I decided to do a recreation in software. So this was sort of very, very kind of trendy thing to do at the end of the 90s, beginning of the noughts, is to look at really old school analog electronic music and figure out how to do it on your laptop. So I created a program that I tweaked over time, and it basically did a pretty good job of emulating the original stuff, and it meant that I could throw this piece back into repertoire. And having a piece like this in repertoire for a musician, it really puts you in the wandering minstrel state of mind, because it's sort of like wherever you go, you try to do something that relates to what's appropriate in the space. So in some cases, in the case of a minstrel, you try to figure out what scandals are befalling the court, and you turn that into bawdy lyrics. And when you're working in sort of like experimental electronic and acoustical music, you say, well, I guess every concert hall is basically a gift to me in terms of giving me musical material for a performance. So it became a sort of like a preamble to a lot of my concerts over the last 10, 15 years or so. And that's where all these recordings came from.
And I guess to pull your 20-year wave from the 70s to the 90s to now, we should, I guess, organize some sort of orchestra where everybody has a cell phone and is playing your app into a microphone that's feeding back into the room or something?
Yeah, that could be really irritating. It's so funny, you know, because feedback is that sort of devil's material, right? I mean, it's just one step to the side of Robert Johnson in terms of its sort of historic associations as this kind of rage. And yet that time in the 70s, everything was very mellow. It was the decade of the triangle wave and the sine wave, you know. Everything was very sort of clean and smooth. And I figured out just a handful of tricks that made the feedback this sort of very beautiful sort of under control, dreamy soundscape, which is, you know, sort of my biggest problem as a composer is everything I do is sort of dreamy and unaggressive. And I'm only recently at a late age beginning to come out of it. But you know, the problem is I had all these recordings, and I had this weird idea that since every concert hall is in a different key, that I would create an edited sequence of excerpts of these recordings that would be like some ponderous heavy metal anthem slowed down a lot, you know, with those sort of chords with ninths and sevenths in them that I don't understand why anyone would ever play them on a guitar, but they do. So, but my problem was indecision, that every time I tried to sequence them in any particular way, I thought, well, I could also do it another way. And that's when I began to work on this app, because I figured, well, why not just have it be a random play function, and then every time you hear it, you get a kind of different sequence of spaces. And it took a long time to do, because it turns out that it's not easy to get web browsers to play back two sounds at the same time, which is kind of like strange, but it's true. They're really about playing one sound after another.
I mean, any device, it's difficult to get to play, not just you know, any app on it.
It's true. I mean, try to get your iPod to do a crossfade in the iTunes.
There's a one DJ app that's come out, and they're more sophisticated and they cost more money, all of them.
Right. Yeah, and so I had this wonderful ex-student from the Art Institute named Nick Britz, who's an absolutely brilliant programmer. He's very involved in the sort of data hacking and field, and he's just brilliant. And so he finally, I think he was the third programmer I worked with, and he finally got the thing going. And it's nice because, I mean, the biggest problem I had was trying to convince people who were interested in sort of publishing or promoting it that it couldn't be sold. You know, because it actually doesn't run very well on phones. It's really a kind of a computer-based app. But the thing is that I used to put out records and cassettes and CDs in the 80s. And the last sort of big projects I did were towards the end of the 90s. And kind of post-file sharing, I get this feeling that when you put out a CD, I mean, unless you're Jay-Z, everything just gets lost in the blogosphere. I mean, I can't imagine how you find records anymore because there's so many of them. So I sort of despaired of making some kind of a record that I could sell and that, you know, would attract enough attention that people could find it.
And you're not touring the country in a van and need something to pay for gas as you go along either.
No, and I'm told that actually t-shirts sell better than
right.
Anyway. So maybe I should embed the app in a shirt. That could
it won't be long.
Yeah actually I should think about that, but
if you can get the image to move like that on the shirt.
Oh, would that be nice if you could have spinning images on shirts? I'll work on that one. We have a very, very hip Department of Fiber and Material Studies at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and if I just put that teaser out saying I want them to figure out a way that we can make things spin on a shirt, I'm sure I'll get something back in a week.
Have you looked at the page when you were hungover yet?
Which one?
The
one
your page, the Pea Soup to Go page. Yes.
Yeah, it is. I tell people it's basically an audio screensaver. You know, it just sort of sits there, and it's good for when you're doing the cleaning and, you know, insomnia. It's good for insomnia. And, you know, it just sort of drifts around, and then if you're interested, you can click on it and find the details of where an individual performance you're listening to took place and who's playing on it. I mean, there's some amazing musicians who've participated in this piece over the years, from, you know, George Lewis is in there, Ben Neal is in there, Garth Knox, Robert Paus from Band of Susans, Peter Cusack, who's a sort of a wonderful improvising guitarist and bouzouki player from London, Jonathan Impet, who's a British trumpet player I've worked with for a long time. A pretty remarkable range of musicians who very often are so deeply entwined in the feedback that you're not even sure they're playing.
And do you have favorite the spaces, favorite spaces that are included? Because the space plays as much a role as these performers, is that?
Oh yeah, that's true. I mean, I shouldn't begrudge the architects. Sorry, architects, but. Well, I do have – there's one track on there that was recorded in what's called an ice cellar in Brussels, where under the city of Brussels, they sort of hollowed out this sort of artificial cave. It may have been a cave to begin with, but they made it much, much bigger. And it looks sort of like a dumbbell when you're in it. And it's absolutely enormous. It's like three stories tall. And they used to use it to store ice in during the summer. They'd fill it up in the winter and they'd store that there in the summer for when you needed ice for, I don't know, whatever you need ice for in the summer, making gin and tonics, I guess. And this thing was just, you know, one of those awesome spaces of the sort that, for example, Pauline Oliveros and her Deep Listening Band always search for. And a friend of mine came up to me partway through the gig. It was just a long kind of installation for an hour and a half one night. And he looked at me and he said, "Church of Sound." And, you know, that happens with those big spaces. There's a very nice recording I have with George Kramashi from Oakland on double bass. It was done in a monastery in the Czech Republic that similarly just has this insane reverb time. For those of us who are obsessed with actually knowing what we're listening to, and this goes back to the people who used to always read the record cover while listening to the music in their room as teenagers, you can link through from the app, which is like a complete sort of random play thing, to another part of my website where all the tracks are there in a historical sequence with, you know, sort of all the information in front of you, and you can sort of pick and choose, put together what you want.
Yeah, this is Adelaide 2010 is playing right now.
Adelaide. Ah, yeah. I think it's like a cello and a saxophone on there, maybe. It's kind of funny because, you know, this piece, you work with pickup musicians wherever you go, and it's sort of like inviting someone to a seance in your hotel room because, you know, you have never have any idea what's going to happen, and you're not really sure whether these musicians are going to, you know, be the right ones for it or not. And you sort of have to tell people to not do much, but it's very pleasing, and it's a very immersive experience as a performer. And listening to it as an app, I mean, what can I say? Like I mentioned earlier, it certainly isn't very irritating, if you want to put it in that category.
Now, it kind of is sort of similar to the what is it, the Buddha boxes?
Yeah, I suppose it has a kind of but it's like a Buddha box cheap, because the Buddha box guys actually had to figure out what what notes they were going to put in it, and of course I didn't.
All right, did we leave anything out, or does that cover what Pea Soup to Go is all about?
No, it seems to be my gift to the world. In other words, I'm encouraging everybody to go listen to it because I sort of would like to have people listen to it, but it's not as though a penny goes into the coffer anytime you go. It's completely free, and you know, it's just it's pleasant to think that finally all this stuff is out there.
All right, Nicholas Collins, and you can go to nicholascollins.com/peasoup2go to listen to Pea Soup to Go. Thank you for Skyping in from Chicago.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Nicholas Collins on Waveform Radio on WGXC 90.7. Thank you.
Yeah, take care. Bye now.
All right. We are going to tune in a little more Pea Soup to Go, and then we'll hear some Devil's music from Nicholas Collins on the Saturday afternoon show. Reminding everyone, tonight at 7 p.m., we're going to attempt to tune in Black Lake at the Winter Walk in Hudson at the Jeff Bailey Gallery. I think it's 127 Warren Street in Hudson tonight. And also, I think there'll be some WGXC personnel at Nevin & Nevin Modern at 613 Warren Street during Winter Walk tonight. And Winter Walk, I guess, is 5 to 8 p.m. in Hudson. There's also, every town up here has got something holiday special going on. Santa is bouncing around every town today. I think East Durham has got moved until Sunday. So anyway, that's the local news. We're going to get back to Nicholas Collins, Pea Soup to Go now, we're hearing, and then a little more Devil's music from Nicholas Collins on WGXC and Wavefarm Radio.